This is Digital Story Podcast number 1060, July 14th, 2026. Today's theme is Pardon My Lutz. I'm Derek Story. Film simulations, photo styles, and LUTs aren't gimmicks. They are artistic tools to help photographers better match the mood of their images to the subject material they are capturing. This past weekend, I did exactly that during a visit to the classic baseball stadium, Oracle Park in San Francisco. The resulting images convey the feelings I had there spending time with my family. I'll explain more, plus industry news, on this week's TVS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. Well, surprise, surprise. No sooner did I publish last week's podcast that included a note about my delayed Panasonic L10 than I received a shipping notice from them and had the camera the very next day. Maybe I should complain about not winning the lottery as well. The camera itself, I have to tell you, is fantastic. In part because Panasonic has created an entire ecosystem around it, including the Lumix Lab app and its library of photo and video LUTs that we can download for free. So I dug in right away. And let me tell you a little bit more about this ecosystem. The app is on my iPhone, and there's also an Android version of it. And basically, it's like a lot of these camera apps that we use all the time, which is, you know, you have the app on the phone, you have your camera, camera has Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. You connect the two, and you can do all sorts of fun things. Sometimes those fun things work really well. Sometimes you just end up shaking your head in disgust. And it can go either way. I will say with my initial testing with Lumix Lab, and this is the first time that I've used it, I will say that it is very solid, very rock solid. The connections happen fast. The app itself is well designed. And Nikon has done this to some degree with SnapBridge as well, is that they have creators creating LUTs that you can view on the app. You get before and afters and all that good stuff. And then the ones that grab you, the ones that you like, you can download and send them to your camera. Once they're in the camera, you have easy access to them because Panasonic has felt that the LUTs are so important that they gave it a dedicated button on the back of the camera so that you can see the ones they've included and then you can see your own LUTs there. Now, I know I'm talking about the L10 right now because that's the camera I used last weekend, but I have gone through the same process for the Nikon ZF, for my Olympus OM3, and for the Fujifilm X100V. So all these camera brands tend to have something like this. Sometimes they're called photo styles, sometimes they're called art filters, sometimes they're called film simulations. There are all sorts of different names for essentially the same thing. There is some difference in design between, let's say, a LUT and a photo style, but that's for a different podcast. Essentially, what they do is they allow you to adjust the default color style of your camera to something that is more appropriate for the subject that you're shooting. I had no problem finding the LUTs that I wanted and getting them on to the L10. So we had a family gathering scheduled for Sunday at beautiful Oracle Park in San Francisco. And I love this baseball stadium. We used to have a ballpark south of town called Candlestick Park, which was more of the style of ballparks when it was built, you know, kind of these big stadiums, but nothing really, you know, characteristic about it. It was just a big baseball park and it was far away from downtown San Francisco. So when they decided that they wanted to build Oracle Park, and it's had different names over the years, AT&T Park and so forth. But when they decided they wanted to build this stadium, there were a couple things that were important to them. One is that it would be in the city itself. It is in the city. In fact, from one of my son's apartments, who lives in San Francisco, we can walk to the ballpark. So we can walk to the ballpark, go to a game, come out afterwards, have a bite to eat, and walk back to his place and leave our car parked there and not have to mess with all the stuff that's going on. So having that inner city ballpark is super important. And it changes everything. Like when the ball game is over and everyone's flowing out of the stadium, they're just flowing out into the streets. And you see all these people with Giants hats and all this kind of stuff roaming around the city, going into the restaurants, hanging out in the parks. It's really a good vibe. So that was one of the things. The other thing was that they wanted the ballpark to have a little bit of that old time feeling. And what I mean is a little bit smaller in design, some interesting nooks and crannies. And then they used bricks as the primary building material for the ballpark, which is kind of interesting considering that it's in San Francisco, but I won't go too far down that road either. But the bricks just look fantastic. The design is beautiful. So that when you approach the ballpark, you really feel like you're going toward not only something special, but something that fits with the vibe of the city, something that has that same kind of warm, inviting feeling. And then you get in the ballpark and it's absolutely beautiful. You still got all the cool things. And then it has like some really unique design elements, like the right field has a wacky corner and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then the San Francisco Bay is right there outside the ballpark. And what Barry Bonds used to do all the time is that if you hit it out of the ballpark and you hit it out over that wall, then it goes in the bay. And then there's a whole bunch of boaters and stuff hanging out in the bay. And they all paddle trying to get to that baseball. And we call it the splash hit, you know. And so there's a lot of neat things that go on about it. And when I know I'm going to go to a game there, I want to be ready photographically to capture something special, because it is something special. And the other cool thing about it, and I think maybe this is because it's baseball and as opposed to some of the other indoor sports, is that we can bring a camera. we can actually have a camera. Now, they don't want us bringing in a big interchangeable lens camera with a giant zoom. But when I had the L10 around my neck, they didn't even look at me twice. And I'm not there to shoot baseball. I'm not going to be shooting baseball from, you know, whatever I'm in, the 15th row or that kind of thing. I am there to record the experience of being in the stadium. And you don't need 600 millimeters to do that. I have the L10 and it was perfect for what I wanted to do. That was what I was looking forward to. And I wanted to find a look that sort of captured all that stuff that I've just been talking about. So I downloaded a dozen LUTs from the Lumix Lab and I transferred them to the L10. Now, one of them in particular that seemed perfect for this upcoming outing was called Fresh Bright. And it was by a Japanese creator. And her name is J-I-E-M-O, and I do not want to pronounce it wrong, so we will just call her J-I-E-M-O. And I love what she created. That look, that LUT she created was absolutely beautiful, and I knew that's what I wanted to use for this photo shoot. Here's what they say about that LUT on the Lumix Lab app. The Japanese-inspired bright and fresh LUT is specifically designed to create vibrant, light-hearted portraits. By brightening shadows, reducing contrast, and enhancing color depth, it produces a clean, transparent visual quality. Rather capturing sunny outdoor scenes or well-lit interiors, it effortlessly infuses your work with a refreshing vitality and gentle atmosphere, effortlessly conveying a lively and soothing Japanese lifestyle aesthetic. That's a pretty nice little write-up there, I have to say. And it looks great too, right? The San Francisco Giants colors are orange and black. Those accents are everywhere around the park, including the hats and the shirts that the fans wear. This color palette is placed against a red brick design of the ballpark that I was talking about earlier. And then if you're lucky, like we were on Sunday, the blue summer sky is above. And so it's really a wonderful color palette, especially if you get, you know, kind of the right vibe to it. Now, applying this fresh, bright LUT to the setting produced kind of a Kodachrome-like color palette, to be honest. But the shadows were opened up a bit more, had a bit more detail, and there was a luminosity that was cheerful and upbeat. I mean, it really felt good. And the way that I set up the camera, we have the option of JPEGs or HEIF files, high efficiency files, or RAW files. I'm not shooting with RAWs right now because I'm just waiting for the RAW profiles to come for all the apps that I use, which is not a problem because I like shooting JPEGs and in this case HEIFs anyway, and especially if I'm shooting any sort of simulation or LUT, that's what I'm going to be using. I'm just shooting HEIFs right now, which I really like. This is the first camera that I've had that makes shooting HEIFs easy and totally universal. And the thing about them is that the quality is a bit higher than JPEGs, for sure. They're a bit more editable than JPEGs, and they're more efficient in terms of file size than JPEGs. So it's sort of a cake and eat it situation. This camera is my first real opportunity to just forget about JPEGs. Well, other than the iPhone 17, which I've been shooting HEIFs with that forever. But other than the iPhone, I should say, this camera has been my opportunity to really play with these files on, you know, a serious level. I took pictures of everything that grabbed my eyes. The architecture of the stadium, the Jumbotron that was showing all sorts of fun things. They were also having a special theme day there, SpongeBob and his friends. SpongeBob has a special place in my heart, I will tell you. Because some of my fondest memories as a father was watching SpongeBob SquarePants with my boys when they were 5 and 6 years old. And they were great. They would like explain all the characters to me, and they would explain how silly Patrick was, and they would, you know, go into all the details. And not only did I like the cartoon itself, I really did enjoy watching it with them, but I just loved their dialogue that accompanied it. And so some of my fondest memories of hanging out with the boys at that age was watching SpongeBob SquarePants with them. And so here we are, all of us together, Teresa and the boys and myself, at Oracle Park, and it's SpongeBob Day. I mean, it just couldn't have been better, honestly. So there was all that stuff going on. Someone proposed, and they had that all set up so that it was showing on the Jumbotron, and of course she said yes. There's all the fan interactions going on. I just took pictures of all sorts of good stuff. The L10 was around my neck the whole time. It performed really well. But the real joy came when I was reviewing the pictures later that night. And again, I just used this one setup the whole time. I didn't play with anything but exposure. The shots were what I wanted. They were warm. They were cheerful. They were heartfelt. And the color palette really was the finishing touch to the photographs themselves. And, you know, we sometimes have a vision of how we want the shots to look. And then when the shots actually look that way, it's a wonderful feeling. It really is. It's like it just all comes together right there before your eyes. What was interesting to me, at the same time, Teresa was taking pictures with her iPhone 17. And this is something that she's really good at, which is capturing the action from a whole different perspective. And she does this all the time. If I'm shooting pictures and she's there, she's shooting pictures as well. She's taking pictures of me taking pictures. She's taking pictures of some of the same subjects I'm taking pictures of. And she's shooting things that catch her eye. She's got a really good eye. So she's doing all this sort of stuff. She always just hands her phone to me at the end of the day or whatever and says, just pick whatever pictures you want. This is really a nice thing. I mean, this is a luxury when you're a photographer to have that second set of eyes and to have someone photographing you at the same time. She did that last night, and I went through and I grabbed a bunch of shots and just airdropped them to my phone. I noticed what was really interesting about her shots was the color palette. So we were there, it was a blue sky day. Every now and then there'd be a little bit of overcast, but mostly sun shining. And I just noticed how much cooler, and I mean temperature-wise, cooler her pictures were than mine. When you compared them side by side, they were almost bluish compared to the lovely warm tones of the shots that I was capturing using the LUT. And I go, man, oh man. I mean, I knew I liked my photos when I was looking at them, but now having sort of this, you know, this control camera to compare them to really showed me how different the shots were. The other thing that it showed me was that she could take the same shot that I was taking, and this is just my perspective, by the way. She could take the same shot that I was taking, same subject material, everything, because of that cooler color palette, the vibe was not the same. It wasn't as warm, for lack of a better term, but I mean more emotionally than color-wise. It just didn't have as much feeling to me as the one that had the really nice color palette. And it made me think how important color is when we're shooting color, how important color is as part of the overall shot. I mean, we tend to think of subject, and we tend to think of exposure, and those are all super important, of course, but the color, my gosh, in this case in particular, really made a big difference. As I mentioned earlier, every camera I own has this ability in one form or another. OM System, Fujifilm with their film simulations, Nikon, you know, where you can download additional film simulations or picture profiles. And I also know that Sony has it because Rob and I talk about that. And he has a bunch loaded into his Sony cameras. Canon has this ability. Generally speaking, you can download film simulations or photo styles and load them on your camera. No matter what camera you have, I'm pretty sure you can do this if it's a relatively modern camera. The point of today's lead story is that I highly recommend this, because it can become an important part of your storytelling. And sometimes, like when I was comparing pictures from Sunday, it's the difference between really loving the shot and just being okay with it. Now, I know this is a priority for Panasonic because they've made a big deal out of it. They put that dedicated LUT button on the back of the camera, and it makes it really easy to use to change the LUTs that you want. So I think that Panasonic is really on a very interesting artistic track here, as well as the other camera manufacturers that maybe don't make it as easy, but still have the same capability. Now I'm going to print my favorite from the San Francisco series, and I'm going to put it up in the studio. This is a wonderful shot of Max and Zach and Teresa. It's after the game while we're hanging out in the city, slowly working our way back to Zach's apartment. And it just has everything that I want in the photo. It has the vibe, it has the city atmosphere, that LUT just really finishes it off. And this is a shot that I'm going to be enjoying for years to come. And I'll share it in the show notes. Now, they're not your kids, not your wife, so you might not have the same emotion, but you will be able to see how this LUT influenced the shot and really kind of took it to a special place. I have a couple stories for camera industry news. I'm going to start out with this one, which I am totally intrigued by. I have not downloaded this yet, but I'm going to. And this is on Petapixel. I have a link in the show notes. Free Mac app unravels all your annoying USB-C cable mysteries. Boy, oh boy, is this necessary. Let me read you what they're saying about it. While some USB-C cables are accurately and extensively labeled, others are frustratingly blank. Other times, a cable doesn't seem to be delivering its promised speeds or power delivery. Now, there's an excellent accessible solution to these cable woes on the Mac. It's called What Cable? WHATCABLE. And there's a link to it in the article here. Apple's macOS has access to a ton of vital information, some of which it fails to provide directly to the user. Among this treasure trove of hidden data and detailed specifications on the performance of attached USB-C cables. As someone with a rat's nest of USB-C cables, many of which are unlabeled and of unknown origin, I routinely plug in one cable after another until I find one that plays nice with a fast external SSD or quickly charges an attached device. It's very annoying, and even testing doesn't always help me determine exactly what the cable is capable of. Enter What Cable, a new free macOS app for Apple Silicon computers that can very quickly deliver useful, detailed information about the attached cable, including its speed and power delivery capabilities. Every USB-C cable looks the same, What Cable developer Daryl Morley explains on the What Cable website. They are not. As reported by The Verge, the USB-C cable testing app takes the information that macOS already has about the attached cables and presents it to the user in a clean, digestible way, whether through the menu bar application or the standard dock experience. Although macOS tends to hide this information from users, there's nothing nefarious or sketchy happening here. The app's developer notes that What Cable utilizes public APIs. Once the user plugs in a cable, What Cable quickly spits out extensive data, even in its free version. It explains what cable is connected, what it's currently doing in terms of power and data transfer, and what its capabilities are. And then they have some screenshots of the interface here and the data that it's outputting. For example, I run an external Apple Studio display from an M5 MacBook Pro for work. I use a third-party USB-C cable between the Studio display and the Mac. In this case, the cable supports the expected 94 watts of power while simultaneously driving the display at full performance. The cable delivers its promised 40 gigabytes per second transfer rate, and there are no problems at all. I can even see the USB hub on the back of the display through What Cable, ensuring that the connected cable supports all of Apple's promised specs. However, while it's great to have a fully operational cable that operates at full specs, I have other cables of, let's say, dubious origin. It's always a bit of a guessing game as to what it will do when I plug it in. What Cable tells me exactly what a cable is supposed to do, and I can relegate slower USB 2 ones to a charging-only pile. All right, I'm going to skip down. There's more on this, but I'm going to skip down to pricing and availability. I opted for the Pro upgrade, which costs about $13 for a lifetime license, so I could see everything the app has to offer. In my case, as someone who has had their fair share of cable problems, the cable history tools, live monitoring, and diagnostics are worth it. USB-C cables aren't going anywhere, so it will be great to have an easy-to-use app that tells me everything I need to know about a cable in just a few seconds. No more exhausting tests. The free version of What Cable can still do a lot and may do enough for many users. It provides quick information about the attached cable, including its current performance and vital specifications. This is great info. I highly recommend that Mac users try the free version of What Cable to see if it makes their USB-C cable management easier. I suspect it will. This is just really cool. I have a bunch of dubious cables myself. I'm going to download this app and I'm going to find out how dubious those cables actually are. What a great idea. An article on F-stoppers here, and this is a little bit of a rumor, but seems pretty well-founded. We'll see what happens here. I have a link to it in the show notes. A fast high-end Nikon camera is reportedly weeks away. Nikon is reportedly close to launching a fast high-end professional APS-C camera with an announcement expected in the next couple of months. The most talked about spec is a 45 megapixel stacked sensor and a body built for speed. The details come from Nikon rumors, which had floated the idea of a top tier DX model for a while before adding fresh specifics. The site says that the camera is expected to be announced or released in the next few months, most likely August or September, with the possibility of a teaser or development announcement first. It also lists a 45 megapixel stacked sensor and describes a very fast body along the lines of a Mini Z9 or Mini ZR, comparable in spirit to the old D500 DSLR. No model name is confirmed, and the report floats Z90, Z80, Z32, and Z500 as possibilities. Earlier reporting adds another wrinkle. There had been unconfirmed talk that this could be a mini Nikon ZR with some red technology inside. Drawing a comparison to the red Komodo, which uses a super 35mm sensor that sits close to APS-C in size, this would fit Nikon's broader direction. The company bought red in 2024, and the Nikon ZR already brought red color science and R3D NE RAW video into a compact Z body, so pushing that tech into a crop sensor camera is a logical next step. Nikon has never made a true mirrorless replacement for the D500, its beloved APS-C flagship built for sports and wildlife shooters. Nikon Japan marked the D500 as an old product back in early 2022, effectively ending production. And there's been a gap in the lineup ever since. The current DX mirrorless bodies, the Z50 Mark II and ZFC, are good cameras, but they aren't aimed at the pro who wants a big buffer, deep controls, and a magnesium alloy body that survives a season in the field. If Nikon ships a fast DX body with in-body stabilization and Z9 class autofocus, it fills a hole that's been open for years. The skepticism is worth taking seriously too. Over on enthusiast forums, longtime Nikon shooters are questioning whether a 45 megapixel stacked DX sensor is realistic, given that Nikon has leaned on a 20 megapixel APS-C sensor since the D500 era. Others point out that packing that many pixels into a crop sensor raises real concerns about diffraction at moderate apertures and high ISO noise. Some would rather see a 30 to 33 megapixel sensor that balances resolution with low light performance. There's also the open question of whether the camera runs X-Speed 7 or the next generation X-Speed 8, which matters for how Nikon positions it against the coming Z9 II and eventual Z8 II. Price is the wild card everyone keeps circling back to. If this lands anywhere near Z8 money, the math gets awkward fast because you could buy full frame. Either way, if Nikon shows anything in August or September, the crop sensor shooters who've been babying decade-old D500 bodies will finally get to see what their upgrade path looks like. I tell you, that D500 is a heck of a camera for wildlife photography and for sports. I mean, really, it's just beautiful. My brother-in-law inherited one, actually, and I got to play with it. They've showed up at the workshops a lot over the years, but I got to play with one with a long lens, and I was going, I see why so many people love this camera. I really do. They came up with a mirrorless version of that DSLR. Honestly, I think it would be very popular. On the virtual camera news front, we're going to start out with a new online workshop, newly announced, and the signups have been rolling in nicely. Lightroom Power Tools online workshop led by Rob Knight, starting on September 9th, 2026. And Rob is going to show Lightroom Classic users how to make their images spin on their heads. I mean, really, if there's something that you want to do to a photo in Lightroom Classic, and you've been hitting a few walls in terms of using the Develop module, this workshop will change that. This workshop will change. I guarantee it. Rob is so good with that application. And you won't have to wait long because it starts on September 9th. You can sign up right now. Just go to our workshops page. Go to the Nimble Photographer and click on workshops or the digital story. Or just click on the link that's in the show notes. It's going to be a good time for all, I promise you. Also want to thank our Inner Circle members. Boy, has it been fun since I have been back from Costa Rica. We have a great photo challenge going and everyone's sharing lots of pictures. There have been questions going up. I don't know, there's just kind of a really neat activity right now. That's so much fun. And I honestly think that you would enjoy being a part of it. And it's really easy. All you have to do is join the Inner Circle, either as a Inner Circle member or an Inner Circle Bold member. The minute you do that, you will get access to our special Inner Circle site. And of course, you will get discounts on all the workshops next year or remaining this year. And Inner Circle Bold members will get a free online workshop and free webinars in 2027. You can't miss. If you want to join them, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile. That's on all the pages of Digital Story. Sign up there, and the next thing you know, you'll be hearing from me and getting you access to all this good stuff. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this podcast. And finally, I want to acknowledge our good friends at Red River Paper. I cannot wait to print these pictures that I was talking about in today's podcast. I should be able to get to it by midweek. I have a really jammed week because, yes, I have a workshop that starts on Friday here in Sonoma County. I can't wait to get going with it. We're going to be covering the Sonoma County Balloon Festival, which is a great two-day event. We're going to be getting up early. We're going to be shooting glowing balloons. We're going to be shooting launches and walking around among the balloon people and taking pictures. But I do want to squeeze in getting these couple pictures from Sunday printed so I can have them up in the studio because I just love looking at them. And I don't want to have to fire up my computer or sift through my phone every time just to see a picture that really makes me feel good. I want it on the wall here in the studio. That's what Red River Paper can do for us. And that's what you can have as well by clicking on their tile that's on every page of the Digital Story. Nose around a bit, buy yourself some paper, make yourself some prints, and enjoy this beautiful artwork that you're creating. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show, working on more good stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.